assumptions. Therefore, I must choose my words carefully in order to avoid any negative interpretation. Among politicians, this is a tactic known as lying.
Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, Alan.
And as you can tell by the music, this is the Surreal News. We are on the air.
Yes, we are.
And
it's a brand new day.
The little blurb you heard was from Pat Paulson back in about the early 1990s off a little tape I surreptitiously obtained. And as you can see, things haven't changed much. Exciting week this week.
Yes, it is. And we've got some late-breaking news to start with, some election information and some others information as well. And coming out late in the news, the defeated senator from Rhode Island, Chaffee, may quit the Republican Party and join the Democratic Party. That's according to the Associated Press. And we have people fleeing the Republican Party like mad. You want to hear some more?
Absolutely. I think it's just kind of like this dominoes theory. When it starts falling, it just keeps going till something interrupts it. And doesn't have, there's anything out there to interrupt
you
right now.
You remember our friend Bolton, the torturer? Bolton, the torturer?
Oh, he's our representative from the United Nations, Steve. You shouldn't talk
about him
like that.
But he ain't going to be soon.
I know.
He's on his way out, and there's no chance of him being confirmed now. Some other late-breaking news. Remember that Jesus Camp?
Okay. That's right. I was working on the T-shirt concession.
Yeah, so Jesus Camp, there's a movie about it, and this was a camp where young kids go to learn how to be more religious, and that movie and that organization, Hassert, was involved with that, and Jesus Camp is going to close after Hassert's, Pastor Hassert's gay sex scandal. That's according to the Religion News and Services, which came out yesterday.
You know, and I'm really anxious to hear what's going to happen. As there's a whole lot of people out there a lot smarter than I am, Steve, looking over this election, I'm anxious to find out what, if any, impact Hassert scandal, obviously the Mark Foley scandal had tremendous impact, but what kind of impact the Hassert scandal had on this election, because, I mean, it was wild out there.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit about some of that. For example, a large majority of people felt that corruption was a big issue in the last election.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. Before we go much further, Steve, I am obligated, absolutely obligated to say,
go ahead.
This is WSLR Radio, low-powered FM, 96.5, Sarasota.
Low power does not mean low impact.
Absolutely, Steve.
We're impacting like mad this morning.
I know. So we've got some exciting guests calling in. We have the folks from Amnesty International. We have a lady from the, I'm blanking on the exact name of it, the Women's
Donor Network. Donna Hall is going to be calling in.
And you are
hopefully our internet line is working. If you're out there and you have internet, or if you don't have internet, let us know, because we're not sure if our internet line is working.
If you can't hear us, call.
More Republican fallout. Ken Melman, who's the Republican National Committee chairman, is history, I hear.
Ken Melman is gone as of last night. Ken Melman, isn't that like one of those names that Jerry Lewis used in one of his movies? Melman?
Yeah, it certainly sounds like it.
But he is gone because of his Jerry Lewis-like approach to this year's elections. I guess he was considered the architect for the Republican campaign nationwide, and it sounds like, or at least looks like, he should have taken at least one more drafting class because it just didn't work out.
Okay, and listen, I want to thank our listeners who are out there in internet land. We are streaming. We had some problems with streaming earlier, but we are streaming back on the internet, and thank you for that information. And we are getting picked up in many states and also throughout the world as well. So,
and listen, I'll do a little self-serving self-promotion. If you want to tap in, it's www.thesurrealnews.com. You can also pick up our podcast off of that site, or you can go to
thesurrealnews.com.
Okay.
All right. More election stuff, and there's some underreported election stuff I want to fill you in on. The lawmakers ended a effort to ban same-sex marriage in Massachusetts, and what they had done in Massachusetts is those that were trying to ban the same-sex marriage tried to get a constitutional convention going, and what they managed to do is to delay that constitutional convention in Massachusetts to the last day, essentially killing the ban on same-sex marriage in Massachusetts, which, by the way, is the only state now that approves, that has same-sex marriage approved. And I think there's been some 18,000 or so of those same-sex marriages which have been approved so far there.
You know, interestingly enough, Steve, I heard a report where from the gay and lesbian organizations, they do not look at this as these types of this type of legislation or these types of votes as really being the end-all, because they feel like they've got a lot of congressmen and women elected this year that are sympathetic to the gay and lesbian causes. So because
and also
of that,
pro-choice, a lot of pro-choice people we're going to be talking about. And Amnesty International is going to go into some of those in about 7 minutes or so.
So while some of the votes, some of the states upheld the ban on gay or same-sex marriage, a lot of people very sympathetic to these issues are now in Congress.
Now, a lot of the Republicans we hear reported by the Hill are infuriated by the timing of Rumsfeld's resignation. Rumsfeld, another torturer, is out the door. And we're going to be talking with Amnesty International about Gates.
Well, you know, the interesting thing also, Steve, is the president lied, and they have him on tape as lying when he said that, well, yeah. The
president lies?
Oh, well, it's a shocker. It's the first one in 6 years. Basically, he is on tape saying that, well, yeah, I've been in discussions with Rummy for quite some time, and it was literally decided last week, but he didn't want to muddy the waters with all this election stuff going
on.
Yes,
he had already been speaking with Gates when he was telling people that Rumsfeld would be around to the end of the term, and admitted, it was almost comical to see him admitting that he had lied right in front of people.
Because he wanted them to get on to the next question. He didn't want to have to deal with this. I mean, you don't have the president of a major university accept a job on 24 hours notice. Those kinds of things just don't happen.
Okay, so guess how many governor races the Democrats won. Now, I can say what they are, and you can try to add them up if you want.
I know exactly the breakdown.
Yeah.
We have 28 Democratic governors and 22 Republican governors.
All right, so we won
Democrats won
18.
Wow.
All right, I'll just mention Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, New Hampshire, Illinois, Ohio, Oklahoma, New Mexico, Arizona, Missouri, Wyoming, Wisconsin, New York, Colorado, Maine, Arkansas, Oregon and Maryland, according to the AP, which just came out.
So we have a big shift in the force. Actually, if you're a Star Wars fan, I think we can feel a ripple in the time continuum.
And talking about a shift, about a third of the evangelicals voted for the Democrats this time around. That's huge. That's a big gain.
So I have my answer then, Steve. It sounds like the Hassert fallout definitely did have an impact.
WSLR.
So we are anxiously awaiting the calls from Amnesty International. And I was fascinated by one of the guests we're going to have on, and we'll talk about that a little bit here in just a few minutes. But so obviously, Steve, I got my answer. The fallout from the Hassert scandal is very apparent right now.
Yes,
now,
indeed.
We have big news going on here in Sarasota, though, with Christine Jennings' recount. And one of the comments made, and I'm anxious to hear your personal thoughts about this. I heard a guy say the other day, you can't count ether. The votes are made. They're in these electronic machines. The only thing you're going to get,
yes,
garbage in, garbage out.
Yes, it is mandatory in the sequence of events that are happening now, which we could spend a lot of time and go into, but it goes to Jeb Bush, and there's a mandatory recount. And then if it's less than a quarter of a percent, then it goes to a mandatory independent review of the ballots. Unfortunately, there aren't any,
which means
it sort of exposes the fact that this election was illegal, and what Kathy Dent did here in Sarasota was in violation of the law on many respects. And it's coming out now that if she knew about some of the fraud that was going on and didn't do anything about it or was involved, she may be liable for prosecution. Kathy Dent, the supervisor of election.
Well, apparently she did have some prior knowledge because of the early voting and some of the irregularities, the fact that District 13 wasn't even coming up on the screen. The problem right now
I spoke to people that had told her directly about this, and she did nothing about it. She claims she had warned people. People didn't get those warnings. And also there's a scandal about her shutting down some telephone lines, preventing people from communicating some of the voter fraud. There may be some crimes. Now, I got a note from Christine Jennings' camp, and if you witnessed what appears to be a crime with voter fraud, 1-866-OUR-VOTE. That's 1-866-OUR-VOTE. And on some of these voter fraud that you can report lines. There is rewards if the voter fraud does lead to a conviction. There's cash there to be had. So if you had things going on, call 1-866-OUR-VOTE. I don't think that they are offering money for this line. I think this is a separate line, but there are others where you can actually get paid if you can give information that does lead to a conviction.
And the interesting thing right now, the undervoting apparently is in very strong Democratic districts and predominantly minority districts.
Surprise.
I know,
what
there's
a coincidence there, huh?
And
just
we're only
none
talking
of the Buchanan's votes got lost, but 18,000 undervotes, mostly in the Christine Jennings camp.
And I guess the significant thing is you look around the surrounding counties, 2 to 3% undervoting is not uncommon. We're talking 18 to 20%. Here in Sarasota. So,
all right, I've got a bunch of other things to report. Amnesty International is coming in a few minutes. A delayed seat in Texas went Democratic. Yeah, that must feel good.
Oh, really?
Okay. The young voter turnout was the highest it's been in 20 years, according to Reuters, which came out yesterday. About 24% of the Americans under the age of 30, about 10 million young voters cast ballots in the Tuesday's election, which is up 4 percentage points from 2002 midterm elections. Big turnout.
Well, you know, and I'm really excited because, Steve, like you, you are, have always been the same way I've been. Our children never, ever realized
voting,
that it wasn't an option. That's just what you did on Election Day.
All right, more stuff to report. Did you hear what happened to the state legislatures across the country? Again, this is underreported news.
No, and I'll be very interested in that because I know we're still very strongly Republican here.
All right, so what happened is across the country there was a wave of voter discontent that also hit the state legislatures where the Democratic Party won control of more chambers than Republican throughout the country. And this was considered a triple setback for the conservatives. For conservatives throughout the country, South Dakota rejected the abortion ban, Arizona defeated the gay marriage, and Missouri backed stem cell research, according to the Associated Press, which is coming out, which came out a couple of days ago. Now, I believe we have Amnesty International on the line. Jared, are you there? All right, let me turn you up here so everybody can hear you. Speak loudly.
Is this any better?
That's a little bit better. We have you maxed out here, so try to speak up if you can, because we can't turn you up any more than that.
Sure, I'll shout.
There we go.
All right, so Amnesty International, really, we have a lot of things to talk to you about, because torture has been on the forefront of the news lately, and Amnesty International has been involved with that. And also, let me tell those people that are out there that are not familiar with Amnesty International, they want to urge the administration to return the rule of law, abolish the death penalty, oppose abuses related to the war on terror, denounce torture, stop violence against women, end uncontrolled proliferation and misuse of arms, and demand change in multinational corporations. Does that sound right?
That sounds perfect.
All right, so give us your take about, there's a lot of things going on in the news, elections, torture, Rumsfeld. Where are we going to start here?
You know, I figured that the first question was going to be about the election, and I guess that might be a good place for us to start. As you know, or as you might know, Amnesty International is a nonpartisan organization. That means that we don't pick particular sides or parties. It means that we do not endorse particular candidates, and it means that we do not even endorse particular types of government. We believe that it's very important to stay out of that type of partisan bickering, but what we do believe is that anybody can and should be a human rights supporter. And when you look back at the past 2 years of this Congress, you know, there have been more than one occasion where we have found that the Congress has not acted on behalf of human rights. And so our hope is that with the new Congress and with the administration working with the new Congress, that they will hopefully compile a much better record than the previous one did. I think that there's a lot of cause for optimism whenever you have change, and there is a lot of need for change. The record of the past 2 years has just been, it's been abysmal. We could probably start with the military tribunal bill, which passed in September or October, and there was an effort to quickly get it through as soon as possible before the election. And this was legislation that ended habeas corpus, This was legislation that allowed evidence that was obtained through coercive means and evidence that is based on hearsay to be admitted. This was legislation that allowed the president to define torture as he saw it. And this legislation was actually written into the fabric of our nation's laws. And now, all hands are going to need to be on deck for us to revise and change this legislation so that we can restore the America that we all believe in.
Okay, Jared, so now we have the Democrats controlling both houses. What are the chances of reversing this just awful torture detainee bill which was passed?
That's a good question. And I think that you can never take it for granted. And that's, I think, one of the advantages of being a nonpartisan organization is that you just can't kind of sit back and say, well, you know, our guys are in office and they're going to do the right thing. I mean, I think what people have to look at is the fact that there was change. And with that change comes new and open minds. But it is now all of our responsibilities, everyone, to make sure that new members of Congress and current members of Congress who saw the change and said, whoa, you know, I don't want to be swept out of office in 2 years myself, and understand that there is pressure and a commitment by the American people and by the support of the international community for there to be change and for this legislation to be undermined and to be changed. But that's not going to happen unless all of us take our responsibility and call and visit and write our elected officials and tell them that we want it to happen.
Okay, so here in Florida, which is where we are, we're in Sarasota, Florida. And by the way, this is WSLR 96.5, low-power FM in Sarasota, Florida. And we're listening to Jared from Amnesty International. Thank you. So here we have Bill Nelson, who was reelected as senator. And he did vote for the detainee bill, breaking ranks with the Democrats. And what do we do there?
He's not the only one. You know, and again, that's the point, is that this is not, human rights is not a partisan issue. And I think that the idea is, because he saw the change that happened, you have to hope that he's going to reconsider. And you also have to give everyone a second chance. But he needs to hear from his constituents. He does. If he does, the number of people who contacted an elected official on a daily basis is completely minimal. And the amount of people who contact an elected official at all is minimal. So if you call Senator Nelson, you already have a disproportionate impact, because you are only one of maybe 1,000 people or 10,000 people who call him.
Well, let me tell you, I called him before, during, after, and again and again and again and again and again, and he did not return any of my phone calls.
Well, you got to keep doing it. You know, I mean, I wish.
You should see my phone bill from all the calls I placed to him.
Well, I think that's great. I think that's great, and I think that if people from across Florida would call him, we would see different results. But this is it's not easy work. This is a big, long battle that we have for human rights, and it's going to take time, and it's going to take all of us.
Now, Jared,
I wish there was an easy answer.
Jared, when you contact the various congressmen, one of the problems I've noticed, because I lobby for healthcare legislation, is their staff is very fluid. So when you have a contact and you try to develop a relationship, you may call back and that guy's gone. Does Amnesty International also run into those types of problems?
Sure. I mean, there's always going to be a lot of change. But you have to realize that every time you contact an elected official, that visit is noted. They keep records of all of this. In addition, they keep records of letters to the editors in local papers. They keep records of opinion editorials. So each time you do it, that is going into the institutional memory of that particular elected official's office. So it is going to be recorded and kept, even though you might be facing a different individual when you have another visit. But with any type of pressure that you put on a representative, you have to understand that there's a scale of the effect that it's going to have. And it's directly related to the effect or to the effort that you put in. So a phone call or a letter sent through a website is very minimal effort on someone's part, and it's going to be received as not being a very strong piece of pressure on an official. But you take the next step up and you say, well, how about a letter to the editor? How about a visit? The more effort that you put in, the stronger your voice is going to be. But if people take anything out of this election, it's that you have a chance, there is an opening, but we can't just sit by. We've been sitting by for 5 years as we've been facing, really, what I consider is that after September 11th, this country had a choice. And it could have continued to be the America that we believed in. It could have been a country that believes you create security through the rule of law and through respect for human rights. Or we could have taken a path of fear and of isolating difference between us. And the administration and the Congress chose the path of fear. And it's really, it requires all of us now to send a different message and to take a different path.
So we had basically a rubber stamp Congress up until, well, a couple of days ago. Whatever Bush wanted, he got. Money, bills for torture, retroactive bills that protect those that violated international human rights from being prosecuted. Correct?
You've been keeping good tabs on it. And this, again, this Congress could be a rubber stamp.
So talk to us about that. Tell me more about that.
Well, there's no guarantee. You know, it's elected officials look at which way the political winds are blowing. And, you know, you hope they look at their convictions. And then they vote. But there is no guarantee that you're going to get, you know, what you expect out of an elected official. And so, I mean, that's why if Amnesty is a grassroots organization. And I think that we're a different organization than other non-government organizations because we are grassroots. That is, we believe that you cannot just write an editorial. You cannot just, you know, meet with a, you cannot just have staff from Amnesty meeting with congressmen and congresswomen in D.C. You have to create pressure on a local level for there to be change. You can't just say it once. You need to create that basic pressure. And that's really what Amnesty does. And there are local groups and activists across Florida. And if people want to get involved, they can go to www.amnestyusa.org and find their local group and get involved and work with people and make it part of their, really part of their life. This is a full-time commitment, human rights. And
all right.
All have to...
So let's say we take your advice here, okay?
Sure.
So we're making calls, we're talking to people, and this is the response we get. Well, you guys are weak on security. Don't you know that they're out to get us? If we don't extract this information, the next thing you know, we've got a mushroom cloud. What do we tell these people? How do we respond to that?
That is the easiest question in the world. When you hear that question, you should consider that you are set up. Starting with you're weak on national security. We are not weak on national security. Human rights is not weak on national security. Human rights is the foundation of national security. We are not arguing these points because we believe that we want to leave the country and the world more exposed. We are arguing for human rights because when you have a world where everyone has their rights, then you have a world where everybody is enfranchised and everybody feels that they are a stakeholder in the security. When people feel isolated and removed and put upon, that's when people start to act out. And you have to everybody has to understand that human rights are necessary for creating a more secure world. This is how we become safe.
Right, the flip side of that is, well, why shouldn't we torture? There's information we need to get. Isn't that the best way of getting it? And doesn't that help prosecutions?
That's the Jack Bauer argument. You know, the show 24. Fiction, you know, where you have a situation where some, you know, clearly obvious terrorist is sitting with a bomb, you know, or he knows where there's a bomb and it's about to go off, and if you could just get him to give you that specific information, you know, you could save lives. Well, this is not Hollywood. You know, this is the real world, and you don't have situations where you know exactly what somebody has. And you know that they're going to give you the right information, and you know that that information is going to be used easily to keep people safe. It doesn't work that way. Torture doesn't work. And,
so are you saying the information we get through torture is not always accurate?
That's absolutely the case. Not only that, but you don't know when you go in whether or not an individual has the information that you're trying to get in the first place. Furthermore, a lot of the people that we torture are innocent.
So what we need to get the message out here is that that torture is not working and it's not getting any place and undermining some of the prosecutions that are going on. Is that correct?
Absolutely. It's also making our men and women in uniform more at risk.
Yes, you know, the veterans administrations are up in arms about this.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's also just a basic point in the end of this, is that it's wrong. You know, we've been fighting, you know, this war on terror, supposedly out of to stand up for what this country believes in, to stand up for our values.
Has Amnesty International had any access to Guantanamo Bay or some of the prisons in Europe? And, I mean, I know the Red Cross periodically gains access. Do you have that same type of opportunity?
Amnesty has sent representatives to Guantanamo to watch the trial proceedings. We have been there. And, you know, it's important for people to understand that of the 460...
Hello? Did we lose you?
Uh-oh. That doesn't sound good.
I think we just lost our guest. Hopefully he'll call right back.
But Steve, you do have, because I noticed the headline there, that, and I think you were getting ready to lead into your next question from that about the detainees. Oh, there he is.
Jared, are you back?
I am back.
All right, we lost you for a second there. Okay, we got the gremlins are in the studio here. Okay. I was just about to ask, go ahead, finish what you were saying.
Well, I don't know when I got cut off, but I wanted people to know that...
It was right after you said, hi, Alan and Steve, I'm glad to be on the air.
I just wanted people to know that of the 460 men in Guantanamo, only 10 of them have been charged.
Only 10. Well, Steve has an interesting headline that came out, I guess it was just earlier this week.
Okay, so the Bush administration is trying to bar detainees from speaking to lawyers about interrogation practice, Washington Post this week.
And so Jared, as I kind of sum it up, when you're in Guantanamo Bay, they don't necessarily tell you why you're there or what you're charged with. They really don't want you to talk to your lawyers, but when they do talk to your lawyers, you're not allowed to tell them how you've been treated, and then if you do eventually get to court, you're not allowed to tell that either. Is that pretty much it?
Yeah, except you don't really get to court.
Ah, well, there you go. I forgot that part.
You know, what you get to is a tribunal of who plays judge, jury, and executioner. This is it's an absolute kangaroo court. It's not even the word court should have nothing to do with it.
So comment on the secret alternative interrogation methods. So we're trying to keep our interrogation methods are now top secret. Are they top secret? Why would interrogation methods be top secret? I don't understand.
Well, we don't want the world to know what we're doing. We don't want the people conducting the interrogations to be liable to persecution. And, you know, I think ultimately, I believe we're ashamed. I really do. We have situations where the Pentagon General Counsel notes the use of stress positions, waterboarding, forced nudity, attack dogs, threats to families, and that's just what, you know, what has sort of been reported by the Pentagon General Counsel. It's a lot worse than that. And this is really, you know, the question we have to continuously ask. You know, is this the America that we believe in?
Yeah, and there were some stories about, for example, there was an AP reporter who was basically had a rendition and was tortured and came back, and also somebody who was traveling from Canada through the United States, he ended up in Syria. He was tortured. That was reported on Democracy Now. Are you hearing some of these firsthand stories as well?
Yes, we are. And, you know, the other thing to note about Guantanamo is that only about 20% of individuals there were actually captured or taken directly by American soldiers. The other 80% were basically turned over. When America entered Afghanistan, they basically placed a bounty of $10,000 on everyone who, you know, was accused of being either a member of the Taliban or a member of Al-Qaeda. And just relying on that hearsay, we took, and just relying on the fact that people were turning people over not because of the $10,000, but because they were really guilty, which of course was not the case. We have innocent person after innocent person who is in Guantanamo or has been sent to these secret prisons or has been subject to rendition, you know, a word that's often used for the treatment of meat. And these are people who were, in a lot of cases, just owed debts or completely innocent in the first case and were just turned over to American forces for the money.
Now, don't you feel that if people really knew what was going on here, that the vast majority of Americans would be up in arms?
That's the hope, right? But when we have to always understand the power of fear. You know, when people are afraid, and I saw this up front. I had been working in Washington before and after September 11th. And I remember the fear, and I remember feeling the fear myself. And when you have, you know, that sense of being hurt, it's often like how what happens when we're hurt in our individual lives. You know, we look back at the decisions that we made prior to being hurt, and we have a crisis of faith. You know, we have a moment of doubt, and we start to think, well, you know, anything but feeling that hurt again. And so we give up on our principles. We give up on what we believe. And that's only all too human. And so people, you know, should kind of come to terms. We should all come to terms with the emotional response and the fear that we felt and the fact that we were willing to let our principles go. And it's really all too human. But now is the time for clear heads and for us to take a look back at what's happened and reclaim our country. And I think Americans are starting to do that. But there's going to need to be a confrontation of what's happened over the past 5 years. We're going to need to confront a lot of harsh truths. And that's something that is going to require all our effort and all our courage.
Well, you know, the interesting thing also, Jared, is that when you've got radio talk show hosts like that right-wing radio hack, Rush Limbaugh, guys like Sean Hannity, that are constantly preaching that if you go down to Guantanamo Bay, you release anybody, then you're unpatriotic, you're siding with the terrorists,
right.
And that you don't believe in America, then you've got this undercurrent in there. Now, I think the time has changed. I was kidding with Steve before you called in that that you can feel the power of the force, but I think that's changed. But unfortunately, they've ingrained this in so many people. It's kind of like when you it's easier to believe a lie you've heard 1,000 times than the truth that you've only heard once. And I think this is the situation we've got with these guys.
Sure. You know, I mean, I'm always sort of thrown off by the argument, well, if you go down to Guantanamo and release the terrorists. If this country believes in anything, you know, if you're taught anything when you're going through civics, you know, as a student, is that this country has a presumption of innocence. And that presumption has been entirely lost. You know, we are taking people and putting them beyond our judicial system. We are basically assuming that people are guilty before they've even had a chance for a trial. We're not giving them a trial. A basic question that people could ask their friends who support the current path that this country has taken is, well, do you believe that individuals should not have access to the evidence used against them? Do you believe that you should be held, that someone can be held and not know why why they're being held and not be able to contest the evidence used against them?
Now you're going back, what, about 600 years for the habeas corpus? And
yeah.
When we had Keith Fitzgerald on, he said that, you know, it doesn't stop with the Magna Carta. It goes back even further than that. And he won our District 69 for the House race down here. We had him on several times, but he's a political science professor. And he said, you know, people kind of keep focusing on your change in the Magna Carta. He says, it goes back to Roman times. It's much older than this.
It goes back before that. You know, it goes back to basic human values of what's right and what's wrong. And should you charge, you know, should you basically convict somebody of a crime and punish them for a crime before knowing that they committed it or not. You know, it throws every basic standard that we have as human beings on its head. We don't need laws to point out what's wrong and right, and I think we've really just, we've lost track of that.
All right, so this is WSLR 96.5 Low Power FM in Sarasota, Florida, and Jared from Amnesty International is here. Okay, so you have people like Cheney, Rumsfeld, Bolton the torturer, Gonzalez the torturer, these guys who are giving us this information that, oh, gee, we need these techniques, and somehow you're un-American if you talk against them. Now, how can... Where is Cheney coming from where he's saying that we need to torture people? You know, we say this is some kind of a new world order. I don't understand how the logic and how anybody can try to say that torture is a good thing and you're somehow un-American if you're not for it. And even our own, you know, Senator Nelson here was echoing that. Do you understand the arguments that this is coming out of?
This is nothing new. You know, when you look back at any human rights violation that has occurred, you know, anything from slavery to the Holocaust, it starts with basically undermining the people who are subject to this mistreatment as being less than human, as not deserving rights, and that is a basic condition in order to treat people in an inappropriate way. Is you have to convince yourself that these are people who are not even really human. You know, you have to degrade them in that basic way before you then are willing to treat them in these conditions. And I believe that is a jump that Vice President Cheney has made. He has said these are people who are not human, and thus these are people that I do not need to think twice about treating in an inhuman way. And what we need to do is we really need to bridge those gaps again and to understand that we are dealing with human beings. I think that when we talk about the message of why we're building a secure world upon human rights, it starts with a basic understanding that we're dealing with other human beings. And we have to understand motives. We have to understand what is going on in the world. We have to understand how our country is perceived. And we have to understand that how we treat people who are different, and people who we believe are different but are really the same, that there's a lot more that binds us than separates us.
And around the world, this election was seen as a referendum against the war, against Bush, against torture, and it seems like there's an opportunity now for America to regain its status throughout the world if we continue to reject these clearly criminal policies which have been put forth by the Bush administration.
Yeah, but it's going to take courage. I think one of the basic tenets of the administration, at least you know when it comes to national security, is the myth of American exceptionalism. It's the idea that this country can do no wrong, and it's the idea that that individuals, that U.S. citizens, you know, have special rights, and that everybody else should be subject to, you know, to being treated unfairly. And when you look at sort of the rulings of someone like Justice Scalia, and you look at the political beliefs of someone like Vice President Cheney, they basically are based around the idea that, well, we're not going to treat U.S. citizens in this way, but we can treat other people this way because they do not have the protection of the U.S. Constitution. And first of all, that's wrong. The U.S. Constitution does not distinguish between citizens and non-citizens. It defines, it uses the word people. And so we have to get rid of that that basic divisive way of looking at the world.
Now, it seems to me that Cheney and Rumsfeld and Bolton also have done everything they can to undermine the international mechanisms for preventing these abuses. For example, the International Court or the UN. And that it also seems to me, my personal opinion, which are not those of WSLR or its board or its volunteers or Amnesty International, there, I did that disclaimer there, this is political comedy, is that the only thing that Cheney and Bolton will understand is threats. If you try to reason with these people, you're trying to, it's like negotiating with a terrorist. You know, they say you don't negotiate with a kidnapper or something like that. So what about the international rule of law, since we've passed a law that prevents retroactively give amnesty, if you excuse using that word, for the torturers here in the United States? What about international rule of law?
Well, you know, I'm an optimist. I am. And I believe that you do not, no one is beyond comprehension of humanity. And
even Cheney?
Even Vice President Cheney, you know, he...
I mean, did you see his wife being interviewed on CNN? I mean, she was way out there.
this is human rights, right? This is the understanding that there is a common humanity.
But are these people truly human? I don't know about Cheney if there's a heart beating in there anymore.
Right, but I know, but you see what you're doing. It's the same thing when Cheney says, well, these people aren't human. We have to believe in our better instincts. We have to believe in the potential of humanity, and we can't put anybody beyond those basic principles, even Vice President Cheney. And I think we are doing
you really believe you can make sense with this man?
I believe you can make sense with anyone. I believe you can come to terms with the respect for humanity and understand the person behind every political belief. You can't get there. You have to believe it.
I mean, this is a man that basically was going along with a law that would arrest you because considered you personally, Jared, to be a terrorist, and then would feel justified in sending you to Gitmo without a lawyer because he feels that you're a terrorist. I mean, how can you negotiate with somebody who's imprisoning and torturing you?
You know, it's funny, right? Because this is the argument Cheney will make when they say, how can you negotiate with terrorists, you know, that the only thing they understand is threats, the only thing they understand is the power of the fist, the only thing they understand is force. And that is not, this is, you know, human rights gets a bad rap. It's seen as sort of cowardly. It's seen as, you know, just being wimpy. And it's not. To turn the other cheek, to see the humanity beyond someone who you disagree with on such a fundamental level is very difficult. It's probably the most difficult thing that we can do. And I'm not saying necessarily that I could do it. You know, if you...
Or me.
Yeah, but we have to aspire towards it.
All right, we're going to have about 1 minute left, and then we need to free up the line. We have another caller calling in, Donna Hall from the Women's Donor Network is also going to be talking to us about human rights today. And give us a one-minute summary of what you want, the message that you want us to deliver here.
Okay. Well, there's two things. The first is, as we discussed at the beginning of the conversation, and I greatly appreciate you making the time available for me to speak with your listeners, is that everybody needs to work together to reclaim this country from the direction that we've taken. So get involved with Amnesty. It's amnestyusa.org. Find your local group. Find local activists in your part of Florida and start getting involved. We need to do this together. And if you do work, you can create change. And the second is I just wanted to quickly talk about Darfur because it gets lost in...
Yes, we hear very little about that.
And what is going on in Darfur is one of the greatest human rights crises of our time. And I encourage people, we don't have the time to get into the details, but I encourage people to look up and read up on what's going on and to let their elected officials know that we need to support a vibrant and powerful UN force in Darfur that's going to work towards peace.
Thank you, Jared, from Amnesty International. Very good. Jared, we hope to be hearing more from you. Everybody, go to the website, amnestyusa.com, right?
.org.
Okay, there you go. Thank you, Jared. Have a great weekend.
Thank you so much, Jared.
Peace
Take
be
care.
With you. Okay, that was Jared from Amnesty International, and we have another
guest who's going to be calling in a minute. We're going to fill the time with some late-breaking news. We have lots of other things to report.
And, you know, listening to him, though, Steve, very, very kind young man, and I wish that I had, in my heart, could see beyond the frailties of other people. So it's just interesting to talk to somebody that nice and kind. I do want to remind you that we are kept on the air through your generosity. You can make donations to WSLR Radio. And I'll give you that post office box in a minute.
Yes, and we have another guest who's calling in, and we're very fortunate to have Donna Hall on the line from the Women's Donor Network. Hi, Donna.
Good morning.
All right, Donna, we spoke a few days ago. You called in during our election night special, and we had a lot of fun that night. Wow.
We sure did.
So tell us, how do you think things turned out on Tuesday?
Well, I think it was pretty interesting. I think that our ad campaign, along with many other campaigns, really got people
hyped
up. Yes,
so tell us about Count Hakula.
Well, we are a nationwide organization of very progressive donors who are interested in all
women donors.
Women donors, all women, all ages, from all different parts of the country, but we have in common progressive values. And we decided about 3 weeks before the election that we were very concerned about the possibility for a lot of the kind of problems that you all are seeing in Sarasota.
Right here in Sarasota, in the 13th District, we're surrounded. Kathy Dent is the supervisor of election, and she was given many, many warnings with the early voters that the machines were not working. Christine Jennings' page wasn't showing up. People were voting for it, wasn't showing up on the summary page. We're short about 18,000 votes in an election that was decided by several hundred votes.
Well, exactly, and
Hakula, right here.
Count Hakula was worried that was going to happen all over the country, and so he was developed as a character a day before Halloween, but with a very serious message to voters, which was, we cannot let this happen. This is our right as an American citizen. It's a value we hold dearly, and we're asking you to go to the polls and be vigilant and scream about it.
Now,
that's what happened. You know, we are amazed that there weren't hundreds of Sarasotas.
And we did have a bit of very good news here in Sarasota. A Sarasota Alliance for Fair Elections, headed by Kendra Muntz, got a ballot initiative which was strongly fought by Jeb Bush, including the Secretary of State. They litigated this. The courts rejected their arguments. It was put on the ballot, and it was passed for paper ballots and verifiable elections in Sarasota.
That is fabulous news, and that's sort of our next task, is to see if we can spread that like a positive virus.
Let's talk about spreading that, because I want to talk to you about some strategies, some kind of internal Republican strategies that we've been hearing about after the election debacles in the past. They passed a law that said that everybody, all the districts, needed to use the same voting techniques. So instead of using the paper ballots, which were working, they said, okay, let's use this as an opportunity to mandate that we have these voting machines throughout the country, the ones that aren't working that we know are bad.
Right. Well, you know, I think what we have to do, we have a luxury of more time now than we had right before, we being WDN and other organizations, that we have a year and a half now to really sort of figure out relatively quickly what are the right ways to go about these things, taking into account different population needs. You know, if we need to have machines, how should they be working? How can we verify them? What backup systems can we have? And so we want to look for good models and then figure out how to replicate them and how to get policies in place that guarantee that they're going to be there. And certainly
right.
Paper ballots is one big issue.
You trust but verify.
Exactly.
Right? So hopefully, since this initiative was passed here in Sarasota, it basically eliminated the electronic voting here, the current system, because it's in violation of this new law that was passed locally here, which hopefully will prevent it from happening in Sarasota, which may spread to prevent it from happening in the rest of the state, because we're supposed to all have the same system.
Exactly.
And then what do you think about taking that same kind of initiative and bringing it to other states?
I think it's essential. I think that what we have to do is we have to work close in hand with the Secretary of State. There are some new ones who've been elected who are really great, who are really interested in this, and I think we have to put them at the forefront of the effort and get things on the ballot and get regulations passed. And
yes, and several more governors were picked up as well. The 18 governorships were picked up. So I guess it's different from – can you educate me? different states have different ways of monitoring their elections. Here in Florida, Jeb Bush can basically run the show. He can appoint whoever he wants, and then, you know, then we have another Catherine Harris. What is it like in other states?
Well, it differs from state to state, as you say, and the power of the Secretary of State differs. But in many states, that person really has a tremendous amount of responsibility and power to set into motion, you know, regulations or ideas for regulations or policies or procedures that really look at this. And I think one of the reasons there was a very large Secretary of State initiative in this last election, because people realized that, you know, permanent markers really can be brought about by these secretaries of state. So
yes,
I think we're looking at that as a mechanism.
We reported that the Democratic Party was taking their most trusted insiders and getting them into the Secretary of State and basically controlling the elections throughout the country. I don't see the Democrats as really picking up on this, but it seems like this is sort of a way we should be going.
I think it is a way that we should be going, and I think that, you know, what we take away from this election, having on the whole been very successful in bringing some of these issues to the fore, is that the American public is not as duped as we were worried they were, and that we have a real responsibility to work with those who are on our side and those who are not, to recognize that these principles have to be cast in stone.
Yeah, the sheeple have spoken.
That's right.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, the interesting thing is, if you want to look at a model, and I go to Manatee County, which is a little county just north of Sarasota.
Right.
I have not heard anybody complain, Republican or Democrat, about
paper
the process.
Paper ballots work great.
Optical readers. If there's a problem, you've got something you can go back and count. You can count the ballots against that machine total. And it just worked flawlessly. The beauty of it also was that we had lines. We went to the polls, and there were actually people waiting in line to vote, which you knew right away was going to be a good turnout, I think 51% in Manatee County. So the people were listening. The people wanted change, and I think we saw it.
I couldn't agree more, and I think that, you know, the other things that we're going to have to look at are some of these new laws on the books about IDs and how many pieces of ID you need and provisional
now,
ballots.
Now, that's a poll
that
tax,
system.
Isn't that? If you need a voter ID and you need money to get this ID, that's essentially a poll tax, correct?
That's right.
And well, to say it's not, I mean, people would have to travel some places hundreds of miles to get these picture IDs from the government if they're mandated.
Exactly. So we have a lot of issues we have to look at, and we have to build on, I think, the momentum that we saw in this election and really get some stuff in place pretty quickly.
And Nancy Pelosi, the new speaker, oh, I love to say that, said that her top priority is ethics. And I agree. Get the ethics committees working again. The ethics committees have been undermined and basically are doing nothing in Congress now. Do that first.
Exactly.
And then she said some of the other issues. I think the number two issue, which is nationwide, people are saying is minimum wage, because I think a lot of people feel that is a common issue. It's one that's that people are really behind both parties. However, my personal view would be go for fair elections first after the ethics, so at least we know that your votes are counted.
Well, I think we need to go for a bunch of stuff, you know, pretty simultaneously. I definitely think fair elections is at the top of the list. I think, you know, access to health care, education, I mean, the state of our educational system in this country is really hemorrhaging. I think all of those things are important and critical and have been not handled well for many years now, and I think we have to start doing things on a simultaneous front. But the fair elections is something very concrete, and it's not like we don't know what to do. So, you know, I would say those are early wins, and we got a real mandate from the people who turned out, I think, in higher percentages than we thought. And
yeah,
we
record
really made
number
it clear.
Of young voters.
That's right. Well,
records.
there are wonderful young voter movements all around the country that have been doing a fabulous job of training, educating, and mobilizing young people.
Yeah, we have Mobilize Youth right here in Sarasota, a huge organization that was doing great. Now, the Women's Donor Network, we want to talk a little bit about more about that. Do you also focus on children's issues? Is that another one of your issues?
We do. We focus on a lot of issues as individuals. We're 150 members who do a lot of individual funding, and then we do some collaborative funding. One of the other big initiatives that we've been involved in is a partnership with a foundation in New York called the 21st Century Foundation, who's been on the ground since the hurricanes Katrina and Rita, trying to help build an infrastructure that the government has really turned its back on. And they came to us last year and challenged us to raise at least $500,000 a year for each of 3 years to make on-the-ground grants. So we have risen to that.
This is for Katrina specifically?
This is specifically for Katrina along the Gulf Coast. So we're in Mississippi. We're in New Orleans where we just had our conference. We are essentially we're raising the money and then turning it over to 21st Century, who have a very good grant-making process on the ground and are really working with grassroots groups to try and rebuild and make decisions about rebuilding, and also at the same time really pressure the government to get involved where it should be and in putting those infrastructures in place.
Yeah, and something else that came out of the news, we're talking a little bit about children's issues, that the children of illegal immigrants are no longer automatically eligible for health insurance, New York Times last week.
Children don't have a voice. And a lot of our members are very concerned about that, and funding organizations that really focus on children, focus on women. You know, vast numbers of them, both internationally and nationally.
The Women's Donors Network, do you have a series of priorities? What are probably the top two or three directives that you have this year or this coming year?
Well, I would say as an organization, we don't specifically have directives. I would say as individuals, members are really concerned about the stuff that you guys have just mentioned, plus basic needs. I mean, basic access to healthcare, education, housing, you know, the issues of poverty that women and children face so categorically. And they do their funding through, a wide variety of organizations that are looking at that. For example, there's an organization in San Francisco called the Women's Initiative, which seeks to identify women in poverty and give them skills and microloans so that they can, start rebuilding.
Yes, and a gentleman just won the Nobel Prize for for his views of microeconomics.
That's right, and microeconomics has primarily been an international phenomenon, but you'll see that there are increasing numbers of organizations in this country that are looking at, what are the technical needs that women have. I mean, for example, I'm sure everybody's heard about a nonprofit that started sort of by accident with a woman donating clothes to women who were taking job interviews because they didn't have appropriate clothing. There are places that train women in specific skills and then help them get interviews for jobs. There are increasing organizations now in this country that are taking from the international microfinance movement the ideas of making small loans to women that are repaid, over a period of years and then turned around and given to other women, that are really beginning to show tremendous positive effects. In fact, we're planning to have a conference this spring on what are all of these different models, what works and what doesn't work, what are we learning from them, and what are new models going to look like.
All right, let me comment on that a little bit, because if you loan money, to tiny loans to millions of poor people, it is economically rewarding. You make money on that. And the Bangladeshi economist Muhammad Yunus won the Nobel Prize for a bank that he founded 30 years ago for doing just what you said, the Grameen Bank.
That's right. He was the he started this movement. And what's really interesting and exciting is to see how it's now spawning other models. His model was replicated fairly successfully for many years, and you see it in many different countries, and now there are many wonderful international and increasingly national organizations that are doing the same and now are beginning to ask different questions about, well, how can we tweak this? How can we make it more of an investment model for venture capitalists? How can we apply this to the United States rather than other countries? And I think the other interesting thing, and this comes full circle, to what you were asking about women and children, is that, and he talked about this in his remarks when he was being interviewed the day that he was announced, is that they found pretty early that if they made these loans to women, the loans were repaid at a much higher rate, and the loans were used in ways that really benefited women's children, as opposed to, I'm embarrassed to say for you guys.
Yeah, and it's so remarkable. There's no doubt about that. I tell you, we are coming up on the top of the hour, and we have another show coming in here on hand. This has been fascinating. We need to bring you back and with more time, don't you think, Steve?
Keep going, Donna, with the great work of the Women's Donor Network. Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. I really enjoyed it.
You have been absolutely wonderful.
Thanks.
And remember, as we begin to head out of here, that we are supported by your donations. You can send your support to WSLR Radio, P.O. Box 2540, Sarasota, Florida, 34230.
All right, a little just late-breaking surreal news on the way out. Mike Tyson is serious about fighting women, according to the AP. Meteor destroyed a German cottage. Let's see, O.J. Simpson has a $3.5 million book deal to describe how hypothetically he committed murders.
But according to O.J.'s publicist, that's not true. So we'll see how that plays. And of course, Doogie Howser, also his publicist, said he wasn't gay. And about an hour later, Doogie goes, yes, I am.
There you go. Not everything you hear in the media is true. And a real estate tycoon is renting a huge Hawaiian homes for $150 a month. But you have to be a resident.
Bummer.
All right, well, we had lots more stuff to report that we're not going to get to. Tune in next week for more surreal news. You've been listening to WSLR 96.5, Low Power FM in Sarasota, Florida. Stay tuned for some great classical music coming up with Ben.
Absolutely. And, Steve, I guess until next week.
Thank you very much.
And thank you very much. And we're gone. Wow.